And we are go.
Okay, you want to start this time?
I know. This is your...
This is me. Okay.
It's your baby.
My baby. All right, hello and welcome to the 4T Podcast. I'm Austin.
And I'm Brian.
And today we're going to talk about music in Japan. We'll go through classical music all the way to pop music. So first, let's start with the classical music. So there are two main types of classical music that you'll run into in Japan. That is shomyo, which is Buddhist chanting, which is, you'll hear people, om, mum, mum, like that kind of chanting, mm-hmm. as well as gagaku, which is classical court music.
Yes.
As well. Both of these come from around the Heian period or the Nara periods in Japan. You know a little bit more about history than I do. Do you know anything about these time periods and the music?
Well, during the Heian and the Nara period, that is when China first got its major influence in Japanese culture. And a lot of instruments that China had during the time, they brought over to Japan, and Japan began to use those same instruments, as well as create some of their own.
Yes. So some of the instruments that are from China that Japan uses is the biwa. The biwa is a traditional Chinese instrument that was brought over to Japan. And you were telling me...
It looks kind of like a mandolin.
Kind of, yeah. A very strange mandolin. Very right. Large.
It has a lot of high pitch notes and a lot of really like kind of like low somber notes as well. But it's really in the shape of kind of a mandolin.
Hmm. Some of the other instruments that are used that came from China are things like the shakuhachi. This is a shakuhachi. It's a traditional bamboo flute. This was brought over around the 7th century from China. In Japan, Japanese people took the style of the instrument and used traditional Japanese bamboo to create their own style called the shakuhachi.
Another one that was brought over in the 7th century was the koto.
Yes.
Which is a dulcimer.
And the koto is something you'll hear a lot in Japanese when you go to sushi restaurants or something like that. Mm-hmm. You'll hear either that or the shamisen, which is another instrument inspired by Chinese instruments, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it is. But the koto is usually a very large instrument. Like, a koto is usually the size of a long dinner table. Like, kind of like the table that we're using, like, right here. Like, it's way out over here. Probably somewhere between 2 meters or just under 2 meters.
Yeah, somewhere between 5 and 6 feet or a little bit more than that. Yep. Is the normal koto, although there are smaller ones and there are larger ones as well,
right,
that do different tones.
But if you're actually looking for someone that plays the traditional koto, it's going to be around 2 meters long.
Yep. Some of the other instruments are the taiko or daiko, which was also brought in around the 7th century. And over the years, it has been used in many different festivals. When you go to the summer festivals, you'll hear, mm-hmm. During the obon, people will play the taiko to get the dance, to keep the beat of the dance.
Mm-hmm.
And it has actually resurged in popularity over the past couple of years.
Especially with that arcade game.
Exactly, with the resurgence of Taiko no Tetsujin.
Yep.
A lot of people have taken interest in the taiko, and there's been a lot of foreigners that get into it as well.
Yep.
So some of the music that all these instruments are used in are the traditional Japanese music, such as the Japanese folk music, which is minyo. And these are all, there's four different kinds of minyo. There's the songs for religion, songs for working. So like, I've been working on the railroad, but the Japanese version.
Right. Or Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Exactly.
Or what is it? What is it, the bear in the woods? Like, the other day,
oh, okay.
I met a bear. So there, aruhi, mori no naka.
There you go. So all of these would use the different instruments within them. Most of the common things that are used are the shamisen, the taiko. There is also the shakuhachi the shinobue, which is a side blown flute as well.
Yep. But the biwa and the koto are very, very specific. Like, you do not really see, when you see, like, traditional, like, a musical, like, production or some composition or, like, a group playing together, you usually see a biwa or a koto by themselves.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been in Japan nearly 10 years now, and I've never actually heard a biwa in person. I've heard recordings.
Yeah.
But in any concerts that I've been to, classical concerts, anything, never seen a biwa. I've seen taiko in the festivals, but other than that, you will not really hear them. There's also another kind of drum that's called the tazumi. It's a small singing drum, I believe.
Yep.
The one that you will hold it here or here, and you'll beat it, and there's chords that run on the sides, and as you squeeze it, the tone will become loud, more shrill or deeper.
Yep.
Which is something you use a lot in the traditional...
Right. Also, with the taiko, usually there are two sticks that you use when playing it, and you either hit the drum or you hit the rim with them. But with the daiko is another smaller drum that they hold. They also hold like the other one. And when they hit that drum, you either hit it with one stick, you can hit it with your hand, or you hit it with the stick and you rotate it back and forth. Like this, hitting the drum for a musical production. Mm.
All which produce different sounds. Yes. That can be used in traditional ceremonies, not so much ceremonies, but festivals or...
No. Like, even in kabuki, like, the music in kabuki, especially with drums and the, like, shamisen, those are really, really good indicators of certain things that are going on in like, a scene. Usually when they use the rotating stick for the daiko, usually it's a fight scene or leading up to the story's leading up to a climax of some kind, is usually when they start playing the drum like that.
So they're very versatile instruments, and you can find them throughout most of Japan. But mainland Japan and Okinawa have a little bit of a variance. Before Okinawa joined Japan as part of the nation of Japan, it was its own separate entity, the Ryukyu Island.
Yep.
And so they had a very big influence from China, and so they had their own as well. One of the main instruments that Okinawa uses that is similar to mainland Japan but also different is the sanshin or jamisen. It's the same thing as the shamisen, but it's usually, it doesn't use the same skin as a shamisen.
Right.
Which is supposed to be, is it cat?
No, it's dog.
Dog, there you go, dog. They use snake skin. So when you see a shamisen with a snake skin, it's actually the sanshin or jamisen. It has the same, pretty much the same sound, but just a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
There's also things like the samba, which are like castanets, but they have a little bit of a different sound. The taiko and the something that is used a lot in Okinawan music is the yubi bue, which is whistling, or using your fingers to do whistles, really loud shrill whistles.
Which is completely taboo on mainland Japan.
Yeah.
Whistling is completely taboo on mainland Japan. One of the main reasons being is that it's a superstition or commonly held belief that if you whistle, you will attract spirits or ghosts. So usually you almost never see Japanese people whistle.
Yeah, I remember when I first came to Japan, I got yelled at for that, actually. In school, I would walk down the halls, and I really enjoy always keeping myself busy, and one thing I always do is whistle. And I remember I got pulled aside at school, and they said, no whistling at school. And it was kind of a question mark for me, well, you know, why? So I asked my wife later, and one, it's kind of disrespectful for the school, and two, the same reason you said it'll attract spirits.
Yeah.
And one thing that's really interesting for me here in Miyagi, something that I've heard a lot is if you whistle at night in your home, you will attract snakes into your home.
Yeah.
Something that I had never heard before coming here.
Yep, that's local folklore for Miyagi.
Yep. Which is kind of interesting because I would think you would want to attract snakes because attracting snakes are good luck. They will bring money to the house if they shed their skin.
Unless you're, what is it, there's a snake that's native to this area right here that's actually poisonous.
The Mamushi?
No.
Yamakagashi.
Yamakagashi, that's the one. It's a brown, like brown reddish snake, and it has a yellow neck.
Yep.
And like I saw a baby one, which those are the worst. Like you should never ever try and pester a poisonous snake that's a baby because they cannot control the venom. Anyway, so this one was maybe, I don't know, 20 centimeters long, but you could see the definitely defined yellow ring around its neck. But that's kind of a snake that's kind of native in this area here. And usually it's near the mountains. So, I mean, when they say that whistling attracts snakes, people get upset when you whistle because there's actually poisonous snakes in the area.
Yeah, and there's not many poisonous snakes. There's that snake and also the Mamushi, which is a pit viper.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's not many poisonous snakes.
But I think Mamushi is native to Okinawa, if I'm not mistaken.
It's definitely not mainland. I know that.
I know there's like a Mamushi Zake.
Yeah, that's the English name of the snake is that's Japanese Habu.
Yeah. There's a drink that they make in Okinawa, this alcoholic drink that you get in a bottle. They literally stick the snake inside it, and then they ferment it afterwards.
Yep. It is a creepy drink to to try.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't taste any different, really. It tastes like sake, but that's just the thing. There's all those different things. So that's Okinawan music. Do you know anything else about the differences between mainland Japan and Okinawa or any other kind of music that you can think of?
Not that I can think of at the moment right now.
Yeah, there's not many differences between mainland and Okinawa.
Right.
So one thing that's really popular in Japan is K-pop and J-pop.
Yeah.
So the traditional Japanese music has given way to J-pop. Of course, we still have traditional Japanese music, but now J-pop has taken over. And so J-pop was created around the Meiji era. Yeah. Now, it's not the J-pop we know with SMAP and AKB48 and all that. The music that was brought over by foreigners was made popular through classical music at first.
Yep.
Through operas and other artistic endeavors like that. And then during the pre-war era of Japan, so mid-1920s or whatnot, the J-pop was born. The word J-pop was born. And it was actually influenced, strangely enough, not by American music or by England music, but more from Latin music, which I thought was really interesting. People were really influenced by the tango dances, salsa music, and other things like that. And so J-pop, the word was coined in the 1970s after the war, when all of these traditional Japanese songs were being performed with a more Western scale, Western sound, or with the more upbeat style of Western music.
And then, what is it? You see the modern style of Japanese pop music really take control in the 70s.
Oh, yes.
That's when you see it become very, very mainstream. And then it just, with the, introduction of like Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson, I will honestly say, has made the most influence on Japanese pop as it pertains to dance during pop music than probably anything else out there.
I would have to agree with that. Even today, you'll see a lot of the performers do homages to Michael Jackson. You'll see them perform with the Michael Jackson either glove or some of his routines.
Right.
Something that...
The other thing that actually played a big role in it, especially in the 80s. So the 80s, you had Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So usually, like, your groups, like as an example for, like, SMAP.
There
like,
you go.
SMAP would use certain dance moves like Michael Jackson would use. But I'm not saying that they were imitating Michael Jackson, but they were using similar style of dancing.
Yes.
He would. Now, with groups like Exile, if you're Exile Tribe, now they tend to be more hip hop.
They do.
So
yeah.
if you look at like even like traditional 80s, I don't want to say traditional, but like 80s hip hop, 90s hip hop, that kind of dance style, that is very, very common, even today, with groups like Exile Tribe.
Yeah, and even in some schools, they have dance clubs where they have routines that mimic or take from performers like Michael Jackson.
Right.
And since we're on the subject, we might as well talk about bands such as SMAP or Exile or even AKB.
Right.
And so... What do you know? What group does SMAP belong to? Do you know?
Nope.
They belong to an organization, a group called Johnny's Juniors.
Oh.
So in the 60s or 70s, when J-pop was really coming in its own, a performer who just goes by the name of Johnny created his own corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny, who is still alive today, is the... I want to say the talent director of the largest musical talent agency in Japan.
Right.
His corporation, Johnny's Juniors, is responsible for SMAP, Arashi, Kiss My Foot, even AKB. Mm-hmm. They're all part of the same group.
Well, I know that like the music industry in Japan, it's not heavily regulated, but it's very, very interpersonal. Like, a lot of the people that perform don't actually write the songs.
Oh, that's...
And they don't even write the music.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even, a lot of them don't even do their own dance moves. Like, everything is all done. They are just basically the person that presents the material.
Yeah.
So, one big problem that a lot of people have criticized with Japan is that a lot of the originality in some of the songs, some of the dances, a lot of the stuff, it just seems like a repeat of other things, just changing the lyrics around a little bit.
And that's something that a lot of performers have come into trouble with when they quit larger corporations, because they don't play their own instruments, they don't really know how to make their own dances or do anything like that. Let's see. That's why one of the Johnny's Juniors groups that I really enjoy is Tokyo.
Yeah.
And that's because they actually sing their own songs, they write their own music, and they play their own instruments.
I think Mr. Children is another one that writes their own music, too.
Mr. Children, yeah. Mr. Children, one of the most famous bands in Japan. Well, he used to be. I'm not sure if he's so popular anymore. But yeah, he does all of his own performing. So that's one thing that a lot of people have criticized Japan about. They're not so much looking for talent. They're looking for good-looking people to perform and present.
Right. And when we talk about film, TV, and drama, we can always talk about how these, like, music performers get acting jobs.
They do, strangely enough. I don't know why. But so, for example, some of the groups that have been criticized in the past are groups like SMAP, as we've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of their performances, they have been lip syncing.
Yep.
Almost all of their songs are written by other people. Their most famous song, Seikai no Ichi no Hana, is written by another performer.
Yes.
And they've been heavily criticized over the years. And
right. I mean, I'm not I'm not trying to be mean here, but it's a lot of times it looks like they needed a pretty face to perform the art.
For example, baby metal.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, they're rockers, I like them, but they're not performing their own music. They're not doing
right.
They don't know the message behind their music.
Right. It's kind of a pretty face used to perform the art. So like in this case here, like for especially like in the West, we tend to have more of not an attachment, but more of a connection with like the lead singer of a certain band, or like the person who wrote the music, or whether they be like the lead guitarist or the bassist or the drums, or they are the lead singer and they wrote the music. We normally tend to have that connection. The problem is with a lot of Japanese music is that connection isn't there, because the person that's actually writing it and doing it is separate from the entire, like, the production team.
That's true for almost all of the J-pop idols, that you'll see from SMAP or AKB.
Right.
But then when you get to other genres like Enka, or you get to Visual K or something like that,
yep.
That's when it changes a little bit.
Yep.
That's when the game kind of changes.
Right.
For me personally, I enjoy J-rock or Visual K more than I do J-pop, because most of the artists, they are responsible for their own music, and they take more of an individual stab at the music than
right.
J-pop will.
Now, me personally, I can listen to Enka, but usually for no longer than like 45 minutes.
Well,
Enka is kind of like Japanese blues.
It's an acquired taste, that's for sure. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, like, it is still interesting because Enka still employs traditional Japanese music in like certain songs. Like, you'll have like ones where it's just the singer. I find those ones absolutely boring. But you know, when they add like a shamisen or shakuhachi or different musical instruments in the background while they're singing, I find that to be a little bit more interesting when it comes to Enka itself.
Yeah, and Enka has changed over the years.
Yeah.
More of the modern Enka is more of the Western scale. It's more of a, it's not a pentatonic scale, it's a major scale.
Right.
Whereas the older Enka is more of a pentatonic, somber scale.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is like, especially with the like, I don't want to call it classical, but the older style of Enka compared to the new style, it's kind of like the way country music was, there was the shift in country music basically from pre-80s to after the 80s. Had that, you have different people nowadays still doing like neoclassical, like Brad Paisley.
Right.
But I mean, like some of like the newer groups coming out here, it's kind of, it doesn't really sound like country music anymore. I mean,
right.
Certain elements inside the song deal with items from the country, but it doesn't have that same feel, that same blues roots that country music is supposed to have.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely changing a lot. It's interesting to see, if you ever look at Enka throughout the years, to see how it's changed and listen to the sound. Now, one thing that's interesting about Enka is it's almost entirely Japanese.
Right.
Whereas other genres, there's some foreigners that have come into the musical scene.
Yeah.
So some of the bands that do employ foreigners that I can think of in Enka, there's only one. There's Jero. He's an African American Enka singer, the first foreigner to do Enka. And then there's also Monkey Magic, who do pop music.
Right.
And it's been interesting to see more and more of the foreigners come in as time's gone on.
Excuse me.
You're excused. Now one of the more popular artists that has come out is Chris Hart.
Yeah.
Yeah, he came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he's a pop musician, is that correct? Or
I think so.
Yeah. He's come out of nowhere, and I think he's one of the top Japanese artists.
Yeah.
Of modern times.
Mm-hmm.
So, other than that, let's see, for...
Let's take a quick break and we'll come right back.
Sounds like a plan.
It started back up, so we can start anytime you want. That one was at 25 minutes, so.
I was watching it.
Yeah, just
seeing that.
Just making sure. Because once it hits that 30 mark is when it gets a little hairy.
All right. Do you have anything you can think of to add for this?
Oh, we can talk about metal. How metal is absolutely huge in Japan as a subculture. Like, metal for right under J-pop, metal is like the number one music listened to by Japanese people.
All right.
Directly under J-pop.
Let's do it.
All right, so. Hi, welcome back. This is the Tohoku Teachers Talks, and we're going to be finishing up here on music.
There we go.
Now, J-pop is obviously the number one in Japan for most adults, and including even like kids at school. I mean, junior high school kids and even the elementary school kids are really big into J-pop music.
Yeah, it's all the thing they'll listen to on the radio during lunch. There's Bump of Chicken, Pornography, all those J-pops.
Even Vocaloid.
Oh, the Vocaloids.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's lovely. Vocaloids are... What would their computer programs that sing?
Yeah, well, basically they are anime characters created to, and they create music for them. And there are real people that sing the music, but these animated characters sing and dance on stage while onlookers look at them. It's actually really interesting, like that whole concept. Because they will have like a 3D image of a person on stage of an anime character like Hatsune Miku.
Right.
And she'll be singing a song. And it'll look like she's actually there and singing, but, you know, it's obviously looks like an anime character at the same time.
Yeah, it is interesting. That technology that they have. They've done the same thing with bands like Gorillaz.
Yep.
Which is, it was incredible to see the first time I saw it on YouTube. And the Vocaloids.
I was talking about Vocaloid, the live show.
Oh, yeah. I've seen some of the videos. If you haven't seen it, check it out on YouTube.
Yeah.
Just like a Vocaloid. It is really amazing.
Yeah.
I'm not partial to the music myself, but it is amazing to see the technology.
And funny thing about Vocaloids is the majority of people that actually go to see the shows are male.
Well, you know, I can't say I'm very surprised about that.
Right. But they said like there's a large majority of male viewers. It's slightly more than the women actually like have interest in Vocaloid, like the actual live production. Now, when it comes to the CDs and like other stuff, it's more girl oriented.
Huh.
But the actual live shows and live productions, it's majority male.
Now, one thing that's really interesting that you brought that up. If you ever you've seen the videos on YouTube, for most bands that you go to, you'll notice that there's choreography.
Yeah.
That the audience does for bands. So for example, some of the bands that I go to, you know, instead of headbanging, you know, you go side to side, or, you know, at a certain point in the music, you'll pull out a towel and you'll swing it around. Do you know what that is, how people come about it? Yeah.
No.
It's amazing. There's the music culture, the dedication, I would say the mania culture in Japan is something that is, I have never seen anywhere except for in Japan.
Right.
If you're part of the fan clubs, if you get into the fan clubs, you'll always get emails and you can see people practicing, and you'll always get people telling you what to do in a concert, which is amazing.
Right. Well, I mean, this might actually stem from Kabuki itself.
Hmm.
Now, in Kabuki, this is not necessarily choreography, but in Kabuki, there are clubs that are outside of the actors, outside of the stage people, that are like, that are people that go to kabuki very often. It's called the Kakikoe Club.
Hmm.
And what they do is they have timed responses for after certain actions that the actors do on stage. They'll be like, go for it. We want to see, what is it, Ishikawa Danjiro. Like, Ishikawa Danjiro is the best. Like, these groups here. Now, to be a part of one of these groups, you have to basically be silent for like 5 years. And then once you've learned, like, how to respond and stuff like that, then you're actually able to call your voice out. But if you do it wrong, you get shunned by the entire group.
Huh.
But I'm pretty sure something like that, that Kakikoe Club, is what has influenced this same kind of club with the audience doing the choreography.
I wonder if that's the same, if that's the same influence in baseball games and sporting games as well.
Could be.
With the Oen Dai.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah. Huh. Well, it's one thing for J-pop to have choreography, and it's one thing for Enka and Kakikoi clubs. But what about metal in Japan?
Well, when it comes to music in Japan, J-pop rules out over everything. Mm. Doesn't matter really the age group. But right under J-pop is metal. And, like, quite literally, metal is huge in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and as a matter of fact, it is so huge, a lot of your major heavy metal bands regularly come to Japan and play. Like, Manowar comes here, Iron Maiden comes here, Megadeth comes here. Usually a lot of your major bands will come here, like Amon Amarth, Hammerfall plays in Japan as well. Dragon Force.
Yep.
Dragon Force is huge in Japan as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Whether it's power metal, heavy metal, death metal, what is it, folk metal? Like the Viking folk metal? Or even like Ailstorm, where it's like pirate metal. Like Japan can't get enough of it. Like, the communities for these are just absolutely huge. Like, people will drop hundreds of dollars, and they don't really care where it is. They'll drop the money to go to a concert.
Oh, yeah. What, last year, Knotfest was in Japan, and it was amazing to see... It was amazing to see the droves of people that just came out from everywhere.
Right.
To see it. There were, and Japan's, as I said, mania culture was in full play there. As you'll see in almost any band you go to, there's cosplayers of the singers and everything. And even Knotfest, there were people in the full Slipknot uniforms, and Marilyn Manson, there were people with the full makeup.
Yep.
It's amazing to see. So why do you think metal is so popular in Japan?
Well, I am not really 100% sure, but I know that when Kiss was big, Kiss was also big in Japan at the same time. And the makeup looked a lot like Kabuki.
Exactly, yeah.
And a lot of the different makeups and the way that people dressed had this kind of semi-kabuki like influence, and I'm wondering if that maybe that had to play in it. Now, I don't know for sure exactly how it came into play into that, but that's kind of the feeling that I got from it.
Well, yeah, I remember hearing the same thing, you know, watching documentaries about Kiss.
Yep.
You know, there I'm a little too young to have gone to a Kiss concert, and they haven't come to Japan for a while, but I remember hearing the same exact thing, that they were inspired, or it looks like they're inspired by Kabuki.
Yeah.
And even the Visual K and Hard Rock with the uniforms, it's kind of a costume musical that could be something that influences it. One thing that I always think is Japanese people are so tied down and tied up in the senpai system and the
right
and having a save face that going to a concert like that, is it just a way to let loose?
Yeah, I mean, metal is definitely the voice of screw you all.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah, and it's interesting to see that the subculture that comes out of it, people who your image of Japanese people are very, you know, buttoned up, tight. You'll see, you know, the salaryman, the stay-at-home mom. But then you go to a concert and you see people with the blue hair and the gauges and Right. It's a completely separate culture than you would.
Yep.
Than you see from modern.
And you also see the salaryman who's dressed up in full garb, and then you see him change in a bathroom back into his salaryman clothes and leave.
Yeah, you'll see, you know, with the Slipknot leather jacket and the slicked back hair, and then you see him 5 minutes later and he's in his full suit.
Yeah, the white shirt, black pants, black tie, and a briefcase.
Yep.
Which has his costume in it.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it is an amazing phenomenon that you see in Japan.
Anyway, I think that's what we got for music for right
now. I think I can't think of anything else except to say Raka.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye. Bye.